So I'm here with some activists from the United States and the UK who are here in Montreal as part of a climate justice tour they're doing, looking specifically at the aviation industry, but also other issues. So to begin, can you introduce yourselves?
Hey, my name's Dan Glass. It's really great to be here.
Hi, I'm Holly Jones. Again, it's really exciting to be here.
So tell us what exactly are some of the issues you're bringing forth with this tour?
Okay, so I'm from the UK and I've been very involved with campaigns around airport expansion. The reason why we've been focusing on the aviation industry in particular is because it's the fastest growing cause of global CO2 emissions in the world. And the US, the UK, Canada, India, China, some of the big polluting nations all have to take responsibility. And over the past few years in the UK, there's been some significant successes around stopping airport expansions and putting money into sustainable land alternatives, particularly around Heathrow. Long campaign around that. And communities across Canada and America have asked us to come over and share the skills, share the stories, and help each other in terms of building a culture of community defense, supporting alternative sustainable transport plans, and sharing skills around campaigning and activism.
Has this been a similar issue in the United States as well?
I think that aviation is an issue that is largely neglected in the US, primarily because we don't have the kind of infrastructure in terms of public transit, trains, etc., that can get you from one end of the country to the other in rapid and affordable means. So, as a result, aviation is, it's just an everyday part of life for a lot of Americans. So, honestly, no, I don't think this is an issue that's been brought to the table in any kind of significant way, which is what the incentive was for US organizers to bring Dan and his co-speaker, John Stewart, who was originally planned on coming on the tour as well, to come to the US and talk about their struggles with Heathrow Airport and successes.
I mean, just to give a kind of picture of the battleground, in America, the communities which we are virtually visiting, which we'll talk about why we're not there in person in a minute, is New York, Chicago, LA, San Francisco, Seattle, and others who are all facing big airport expansion plans. Chicago and New York are on their like fourth or fifth runway, for example. There's over 1,000 airport expansion plans in America. In Canada, we're going to be spending some time with the community at Toronto Island because they've asked us to share the skills there. But also in Canada, the difference is there's not so many airport expansion plans on the ground. But what's going on a kind of big scale is that Canada isn't, playing its part in the Kyoto Protocol, isn't contributing enough to multilateral agreements on climate change. They are trying to, Canadian and US airlines are seeking to overturn the decisions to get aviation into the EU emissions trading scheme. So actually they're really not playing their part and doing what's right when it comes to carbon emissions. And actually, so in terms of tackling airport expansions on the ground, sorting policy on a bigger level, there's a lot of issues to share from the UK to America to Canada.
I think oftentimes when climate justice issues get discussed, they kind of sometimes get framed in terms of a individual versus systemic response, right? So how can we make changes on the individual level, on the systemic level? Some naysayers might say, well, how did you guys come here? Did you fly over, right? So in terms of putting solutions out on the table, what are some of the things that you're hoping to convey to people on this tour with regards to how we travel and how we use transportation specifically around flying?
I think that one of the things that's become really clear to us while we've been here is that there is a huge opportunity for improved trains throughout Canada. It's a massive country, but largely the population is sequestered into a very small percentage thereof. So if there were high-speed trains, for example, between Montreal, and Toronto, that would cut a huge amount of flying and emissions right there. So I think that that's one of the things that I'm really thinking a lot about in this process is working out a more sustainable, systemic public transit model that's not just based in cities where cities like Montreal that have, bike shares and other amazing public transit. We need to get that municipal public transit onto a national scale and start seeing massive, train systems, et cetera.
And I'm not trying to play devil's advocate here, but I guess, of course, looking at, you know, the connection between, you know, North America and Europe, I mean, it's one thing to talk about a train system, an improved train system in North America, but I'm sure a lot of people are asking this question, well, what about, you know, travel between...
How did good old British boy get here? So Plain Stupid and a lot of the airport campaigns around, you know, groups involved in aviation justice, of course, we're not against aviation per se. We're against unsustainable transport systems. The fundamental line is we, as a human species, have to live within our ecological means, which means drastically cutting down on our aviation. So what that means is we prioritise stopping short-haul flights rather than long-haul flights. You know, the fact, you know, what Holly was saying, you know, it's much easier to build sustainable integrated transport systems within, you know, land-based nations, you know? So across Canada and America, what, you know, that's the priority. You know, it's completely ridiculous in the UK that the train systems are the most inefficient and expensive train system in Europe. And we have to support people to be able to get out of the binge flying culture back onto the trains and the buses and the coaches. And video conferencing, you know, other alternative means of communication. We've become so addicted to flying, you know, in actually not that long a time over the last century. And the aviation industry is loving it, whilst the earth is really not loving it. And I'll tell you how I got here. I got here on a plane. I got here on a plane because I couldn't get the boat, which I booked, to leave Liverpool to go to Chester on September the 10th because I wasn't given my American visa. And I was so looking forward to go on the boat. And I know that's a luxury. Not everyone has 10 days to sit on a boat. But I haven't flown for years and years and years. I was looking forward to getting on the boat. Haven't got my visa because I was met at my visa interview by the CIA or the FBI. I went there, you know, with letters of support from communities from all over Canada and America, from politicians, human rights advocates, lawyers, saying it's utterly important that people who are not just living under flight paths, but people who care about climate change and the poverty that it causes, get together and talk about this serious issue. But I wasn't even allowed in the building because the guy came out and said, "Excuse me, are you Dan Glass?" And I said, yeah. "I've come to talk to you about the incident." And I'm thinking, which incident? He said, "I've come to talk to you about the super glue." And I was like, "Oh, that one." So the super glue incident was a big story in the UK a few years ago, which was part of, it was a, you know, a public stunt as part of the whole Heathrow campaign. So I had won a campaigning award for working with communities who live under the flight paths in the UK, communities who have a high rate of asthma and cancer, noise pollution, air pollution. And I'm sure there's people listening here who've also lived under the flight path and have been kept awake at night, as well as the other impacts. So I'd won this award, right? And when I got the invitation to 10 Downing Street, where the Prime Minister lives, you know, I saw that the patron was Gordon Brown, and I thought, hang on, something's going wrong here. I can't accept an award for working with communities who live under flight paths, getting off the guy who's wedded to expanding all the airports. You know, that's hypocritical. That doesn't make sense. And I said to my friend, "Well, what can we do to highlight the issue?" And she said, "Oh, I don't know, Dan. Why don't you superglue yourself to him? And while you're stuck to him, talk to him about the impacts of airport expansion from the communities that you work with." And I said, "You know what? That's a very good idea." She said, No, Dan. Back up, rewind. Don't superglue yourself to the Prime Minister. If you Google superglue Gordon Brown, it'll come up." Anyway, so for like 6 weeks before the event ceremony, I was practicing with my housemate, who was the unsung hero. Every evening after dinner, it was like, "You know, super glue time, come on, Gary, super glue time." And so we practiced, you know, it was a peaceful stunt. My hand would be stuck to his sleeve. In a sense, what's he asking, you know, he's asking for it, a campaigning award. You know, that's what I do, I campaign. My job is to put things up the political agenda. And so when it got to the event, I was very nervous, and I had super glue in little bags attached to the outside of my boxers, and I had a hole in my trouser pocket. So when it was my turn to shake his hand, there were other award winners there. I shook my hand, my right hand, his right hand, and then stuck my hand to his sleeve. And I said, "Don't move, Mr. Prime Minister." And he said, "Uh-oh, what's going on here?" And I said, "Don't worry, this is a peaceful stunt in line with Plain Stupid's commitment to peaceful action. I've just stuck myself to your arm to say that you can run away from my arm eventually, but you can't run away from climate change." And all, you know, the audience was like, "Oh, okay, you know, the guy's not going to explode. You know, this is a, you know, a stunt." All the while, Gordon Brown had a little wry smile on his face and was prising his fingers off my arm. And And then it was, you know, we can be climate change, but it's not going to come about by expanding the world's largest airports. It's time that you stood up to the bullies of the British airport authorities and stood up for the British public. And by then, you know, all the people in the room were clapping and cheering and realised what was going on. And I had brought, and you know, those lines that I said were actually collated by the communities under the flight path. So in fact, it wasn't me talking on behalf of people. It was people being empowered, bringing their message themselves to the powers that be. And that was just one of multiple actions which happened over years, which contributed to the, you know, grassroots success of stopping the Heathrow third runway. And actually there was messages of support from communities all over Canada and America saying, we really, really, really need to have some discussions about the impacts of airport expansion in our nations and on a global scale as well. How can we share these stories? Come over to Canada and share these stories with us. But of course, we're not just here because of aviation industries. You know, aviation is one of the biggest polluters, but it's the tar sands, it's the pipelines, it's the big roads and the big motorways and big industrial developments, which are jeopardizing our future to live in a clean and healthy environment.
Mm. How long did you stay stuck to Gordon Brown for?
It seemed like eternity, but it was actually only about 20 seconds. Okay. Seemed like eternity. But the funny thing was, right, I wasn't, you know, I was just walking around 10 Downing Street for another 40 minutes after when everyone was like, good on you, lad. Well done. Well done. Nice one, lad. Stick it to him. You know, I didn't get arrested. Of course, Gordon Brown didn't press any charges. And, you know, that's why the FBI or the CIA are taking this seriously, because I can see where they're coming from. They're like, I just want to make sure you're not going to superglue yourself to Obama. And I'm like, I'm not a superglue addict, you know. You know, as a campaigner, you work out what tools are good for which stunts to get which message across and to, you know, achieve your objective of stopping emissions or getting a message across, etc. So we are going to get to America as well as Canada. You know, we are some of the biggest polluting nations. The UK, US and Canada all jeopardize global international agreements on climate change. We've all got to take responsibility. We've all got to take responsibility for the damage we've already caused to the global south. So there will be increasing amount of discussions and the momentum is building.
Well, I mean, looking at the FBI and the CIA's decision to bar you from the country, to deny you a visa.
I'm not denied either. Sorry.
Oh, really?
My application is currently in the White House. It's been deferred. Okay. It's been deferred to the White House.
Well,
I was just sitting over it, enjoying it, like, Dan Glass, will I let you superglue yourself to me?
would either of you say, though, that there's kind of a political will to not have these stories get out in the United States?
I would thoroughly say that. I think that, so the story is a bit more complicated than just the fact that Dan was deferred with his visa. His counterpart, who's a campaigner named John Stewart, who, it should be known, has been involved in significantly less civil disobedience, is largely a community organizer who has rallied communities around the flight path at Heathrow for a 10-year period. He's somebody who's been named the most highly effective environmental campaigner in the UK. And so on his flight to come to the US, his flight was granted early entry into the airport, into its runway that it was going onto, and several CIA agents armed with guns, came onto the plane, arrested him from the plane, detained him for 6 hours, and then sent him back to the UK. So it's quite evident to me that the fact that neither John nor Dan were allowed in the country is a very clear indicator that there's a large amount of political will to keep these conversations from being had. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't surprise me at all, given that I'm sure the aviation industry is an incredible powerful force in the, you know, corporatocracy that is America.
What the outcome has been, actually, you know, if the FBI and the CIA and the aviation industry, who knows what conversations have been going on there, if they wanted our conversations not to happen, well, they shot themselves in the foot by the way they went about it, because actually the notoriety which has been caused about the treatment of John, the British most effective environmentalist over the last 10 years, voted by the Independent on Sunday, has caused outrage, a public outcry, particularly amongst American campaigners, who it's their fundamental right, you know, it's the First Amendment in terms of freedom of expression, freedom of assembly. It's their right to hear what John's got to say. Mm-hmm. And so actually it's caused many more conversations to be had. And we have done many more talks and workshops, some virtually. I've been in Canada, so there's been a lot of workshops, actually, which have happened because of the suppression of our voices. But actually, you know, what John's extremely good at and one of his campaigning skills is connecting communities to see the bigger picture. You know, when it was a situation 10 years ago when people who were living under Heathrow flight path were maybe saying, we don't want it here, but we don't mind if you build it by Stansted. Stansted were saying, we don't mind if you build the airport in Manchester, but don't build it here, etc. He said, no. Let's look at the bigger picture. The bigger picture is actually airport expansion isn't good for anyone. Climate change isn't good for anyone. Sustainable transport is good for everyone. So let's look at the bigger picture and focus on common systems of support and common systems of opposition. But actually, the same situation is happening in Canada. You know, what's going on is we're working with the community who on Toronto Island and their supporters and saying, we don't want the airport expansion here. And we don't want it anywhere. You know, working with the communities who are fighting the tar sands, saying actually the tar sands fight is the same fight as the airport expansion, which is the same fight as the pipeline, which is the same fight as many other environmental injustices and poverty issues, because actually the global system is profit over the wealth and health of communities. And actually we're looking at solutions such as people becoming angry, getting onto the streets all across Toronto, Montreal, across Canada, America, the UK, this coming Saturday is one solution, people power out on the streets, but also speaking with the rail lobbies, looking into alternatives, creating relationships with the climate science, the human rights lawyers, everyone, all the allies who can actually look at the common problems and the common systems of support. So the same tactics which John's very well known for in the UK, of looking at the bigger picture, is also manifesting in Canada, which is incredibly interesting. So that's all inspired by John's work in many ways.
Another theme of this tour that you guys are doing is, of course, just, you know, looking at this in more of a larger sense, sharing stories amongst grassroots community organizers across continents, which doesn't get to happen very often. So can you maybe talk a little bit about that and the importance of that as you see it?
Absolutely. So interestingly enough for me, this is my second tour abroad in this kind of context where I'm coming together directly with activists who are working on the same issues that I'm passionate about: climate justice, social justice, environmental justice. And I think that I can say wholeheartedly that it is probably one of the most important things we can do, especially in nations like the US, the UK, Canada, where we have such similar roots, such similar cultures, ideologies, and identities, and are effectively all dealing with the same problem. We're dealing with a Western economic model that does not allow for the prioritization of people and our welfare. So coming together and being able to see how these same entities, you know, like corporate entities, for example, are utilizing very much the same tools to suppress all of us. So why can we, you know, so of course it's critical for us to all be able to recognize those similarities and be able to recognize what tools one group has used successfully that we can then extrapolate to use in our own communities and our own battles. Like, for example, the Heathrow Airport expansion and how groups like Plain Stupid and Climate Camp in the UK were very successful in combination, obviously, with the groups on the ground who were community members themselves who were facing the flight path, the threat of the flight path. But just watching that example and the kind of techniques that they utilized is incredibly valuable. And I think that that kind of cross-cultural exchange of understanding these various techniques and how they can be reapplied is absolutely critical. And I think we're already learning a great deal about what's going on here in Canada, and it's really exciting.
And, you know, governments a lot of the time want us to believe that it's our fault, our responsibility as individuals to act on climate change. It's pull yourselves up by the bootstraps. If you want to tackle climate change, you do it. You know, change your plastic bags, change your light bulbs, you know, shop in organic supermarkets. But don't ask us about us expanding the world's biggest polluting industries, will you? Because it's, you know, we don't want you looking there. So actually, it's not just individuals' responsibility by any means. It's a systemic problem. It's actually the power structures in many ways which prioritize, like I said, you know, profit, therefore pollution in many ways, and destruction over people. And actually, it's not our role, our responsibility as individuals to do things ourselves. Actually, it's a collective responsibility. And on a mass scale across the pond, we all need to divert our attention to the big industries who make decisions behind closed doors, such as the aviation industry, about not just our lives, but the next generation's lives, who's going to face climate change a lot worse. So actually, we are looking at organisations like the the ICAO, based in Montreal, the International Council of Aviation Organizations, were looking at, you know, the role of RBS and BP, who are funding, you know, the tar sands, for example. And there's a clear example of how the UK can take action in the belly of the beast against some of the companies who are supporting the tar sands. So it's incredibly important that we share strategic campaign strategies, essentially, about how we can both work across the pond. But also, I think what's incredibly important is that a lot of people, particularly at the moment where, in a sense, it seems like the world is running out of control, you know, we've already lost so much of the natural environment. People say we've lost our chance to tackle runaway climate change. People are devastated amongst the chaos. People are lonely. People are told, in a specific situation, who live under flight paths, when they ring up, you know, the noise hotline that they've got at their in Britain, you know, and they're told, hey, when they ring up and say, hang on, you're not supposed to be flying at 3 o'clock in the morning and waking me up every morning for the past 10 years. You're not allowed to start flying till 4 o'clock, for example. And they say, oh, you know, you always ring up. You're always the lone moaner. It's the same situation in Canada, where the aviation industry likes to make out to communities that they are individuals having a moan. But actually, what's very powerful is when communities get together and realize that actually they're being told the same thing by the industrial companies, and actually they're not on their own. Actually, they're sharing the same injustices, and it's actually the polluting industries, such as the aviation industries, who are the ones on their own. That's when things become very powerful, because people realize there's systems of support, and that they can share stories, and that we are bigger when we share stories.
Lastly, I was going to ask, what are your next plans for this tour, and what are some of the concrete things that you're hoping are going to come out of it?
Well, from here, we're going to head back to Toronto and work with the folks at Toronto Island in helping them with their struggles and learning about their struggles against airport expansion there. And then from there, we're going to go to Vancouver and up to Alberta to check out the tar sands and the various struggles going on there with First Nations and also solidarity groups as well. Go ahead, Dan.
I've been so totally inspired by different methods, different community campaigns that we've met in our short time in Canada so far. And of course, the battleground is different, you know, in between, you know, the size of Britain, the size of Canada, for example. We're not proposing the same solutions, because you know, it's understandable why many people fly across such big spaces in Canada, etc. But we're going to be meeting with a lot of different First Nation communities and a lot of different educational groups as well. There seems like there's a mass wealth of different community education, popular education methods about sharing stories. Oral history seems a very important part of the culture in Canada, and also First Nation communities have so much to teach the UK in terms of combating racism, combating poverty, combating colonialism. Whilst we don't, you could say, have Indigenous struggles in the UK, it's still a fight against white supremacist capitalist patriarchy, which is, by that I mean, you know, the white heterosexual men who dominate Parliament and who are supporting the polluting industry expansion, are also part of the problem with who's causing the problem and who's being affected by injustice. And actually seeing injustice, be it around aviation expansion or around the tar sands or around the current austerity cuts in the UK on race, class, gender, environmental grounds, connecting the dots is incredibly important. And First Nation communities and communities in support in Canada have incredible amount to teach us in the UK. So hope that makes sense. But thanks again for all the communities who are rising up against injustice, be it around aviation or the tar sands or a wealth of other issues which are going on in Canada. So it's a great inspiration.
And in terms of the concrete things we're going to be producing from the tour, we have a blog that we'll be updating over the course of the tour, in which we're going to be posting video clips from interviews and trainings and workshops we've been lucky enough to participate in or put on, writings on our various thoughts of what's been going on here in Canada and how we, you know, want to learn from it or share it, as well as links to all the various groups we've been meeting with and who've been suggested to us, so that we can make sure and get those out there to the people in the US and the UK who are curious about learning more as well.
And there is a campaign from America who are building links with Canadian groups as well to get John and myself and others into America, and saying this is an issue of such importance. It's our rights, it's our freedom of expression, it's our First Amendment, etc. Everything that we were talking about. So there is a campaign which will be online soon to continue building the conversations in America. So watch this space for that.
All right, again, we've been speaking with Dan and Holly, who are here on a tour across Canada as part of a global climate justice tour, looking specifically at the aviation industry, but of course, all these other issues we've been talking about. So thanks to both of you.
The website is aviationjustice.org.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.